Thank you, Harold. So this presentation, hopefully very short, comes with a trigger warning for those of you who don't like bad slides. I would recommend you close your eyes, or any of you came on a plane, put those things on, just listen, sit back, relax. So here we go. So I think this is what you're not supposed to do, is you make a slide and then you read it. So I'm not going to read it out to you. But I've been thinking a lot about, what do we do on the internet? What's it for? You know, all these things, the social reasons. And, you know, we have edge data. It was something that I really wanted to implement on the networks in Oaxaca, rather than, you know, going for a Wi-Fi solution. I have no interest in connecting everybody's phone to Silicon Valley companies. So, you know, 2G data, you can do a lot with it, in my opinion. You know, I mean, it's a lot faster than what we used to use. If any of you are here who are old enough to remember, what was it called? I wrote there V92, and there was VFast. Remember VFast? We did a lot with those things, and so theoretically, Edge is faster than all of that stuff, and you could do a lot with it. That's what I thought anyway. You know, we'll bring this up. I'm pretty sure you can download email. You could probably do some web browsing. You can certainly do instant messaging and that. So, so that brought us to like where I think a few years ago when we implemented first the 2G networks, there was only GPRS. We didn't have the MCS, whatever they are called, 7 to the bigger, the codec schemes, the for faster data. And then we did. And so I deployed that. And I thought, great, I'm looking at my SGSN and I'm seeing loads of MM contexts and PDP contexts and it's all good. And I'm looking at my internet facing interface at the GGSN and I'm seeing lots of packet flowing. I'm looking at TCP dump and Wireshark and it's all kinds of stuff on that interface. And I was like, wow, it's great. Loads of phones are connected, lots of data flowing. For example, okay, this is not from back then, this is just recently, and but you know, this is, I used ifconfig here because it shows me gigabytes in human reading stuff, not like I should be using IP, right? But you know, I'm old school. So that's quite a lot of data. I don't know how long that was running, but that's quite a lot of data, I suppose. Not, maybe not by today's terms, but it's some data. So. You know, this was the kind of thing I was seeing, lots of data flowing. And then so I went to people in communities and say, how's it going with the new, you know, you're loving the data? And they're like, nothing works, man, nothing. Like absolutely nothing. And I said, well, what do you mean nothing? Can you get like a, because the idea was really we were going to just basically support WhatsApp because that's what everybody uses. It was against my personal policy. I would prefer they used other things, but people are all into WhatsApp and that's what they're using. But wasn't working. They're saying, no, the phone, it just says connecting. It just says waiting. And then sometimes, you know, a message would go out, but it takes 30 minutes and then the person would respond and it takes another hour for it to get back. So it wasn't working. It was working, but it wasn't working. Lots of data flowing, but nothing actually. No. So, of course, you know, I looked at my stuff in the lab, on my lab, my office, my table. And so I wonder, like, how fast is this actually? How fast is it? Well, let's ask fast.com. I wanted to find out how slow my internet was, so I went to slow.com, but that's actually some crypto thing. So we didn't have fast.com, we don't have slow.com. So, you know, I've also done this with iPerf, and I'm sure you have too, and we all know theoretically how much, how fast or slow GPRS at Edge is, but, you know, the little fast.com images there are kind of colorful in my terribly trigger warning slides. So, you know, you see if we have poor 4 PDCH running there, we got pretty good 140 KB upload and the one PDCH there configured, one TRX 35. This is complete nonsense, of course. I don't know, they just, fast.com just doesn't seem to be able to measure the uplink when it's that slow. Because it's not slow.com, it's fast.com, right? And that's interesting, the loaded latency over there, 644 milliseconds, and the unloaded latency of 350 milliseconds. I don't believe that either, but I suppose it could be. I mean, once it's established, you're going to get something like that. I'm looking at my what kind of coding schemes am I getting locally. That's just from like a very, very small amount of data. Optimal conditions. For some reason, I don't see an awful lot of MCS9 on the uplink. Is that possible? Well, I'm not asking you questions. I'll ask you questions later in my question and answer session. So on a production site, it was chopped off a little bit there, but it doesn't really matter. So you can see there that, actually, which color is that? I think that's MCS6 mainly, and some MCS9. So, you know, that's what we're getting on a remote site. This payload bytes, I'm not really sure how to interpret it, but what is sort of interesting here as well is the time at a line at the bottom, where you can see that there is more activity at certain times. In the nighttime, there isn't so much activity. But what is interesting is that the PTCH usage doesn't really seem to drop off during the night, when you would imagine that people are not using their phones. And compared to the traffic channel usage, which you do, okay, that's not very good, but you can see it does drops off. This is midnight around here and 6 a.m. And, you know, it's believe me, there's more traffic channel during the day than there is nighttime. But the same doesn't apply to PTCH. That one is the active milliseconds. That one is the actual usage. Not an awful lot of usage on our BTSs anymore. But that is that. And so why was it not working? Why was WhatsApp not working and instant messaging not working and, you know, really couldn't really load anything? So one time I had a colleague in the community, and we put the network into maintenance mode, or just swapped the HLR out for a blank one, so pretty much everybody gets rejected for a while and just have certain phones on. And so my friend was using that app you put up earlier on, the one that shows your cell ID, GNet, light track, light thing, and to see whatever cell she was on. I mean, I could see whichever cell she was on anyway, watching it move around the PCUs. And whenever she turned on that app, then we kind of lost communication. And then she would close the app. We were using Telegram. Then it would work again. And then she opened the app, and no, the message is not getting through, and she closed the app. Telegram works again. So I had a look at the stuff, and sure enough, there's lots of other traffic when she has the app open, and where is it going? Well, it's going to Google and stuff. So I had a look at the app, and it was loading Google Ads to display in the bottom of the screen, and that seemed to be enough to, even with just, okay, so there would have been a lot of other traffic on the network as well, because all the other phones are asking for access and getting denied, and then they don't seem to, depending on the location reject code you give them, but the way it was configured, I think the way we still have them configured is that the phones just keep asking for data access. But that was pretty clear, works when Google Play services is not downloading ads and doesn't work, or other way around. Yeah, works when it's not downloading ads, doesn't work when it's downloading ads. So I started looking into a little bit, I had looked into this stuff before because I'm a pretty staunch anti-Google activist. So as on my first slide, if you all read it while I was ranting, I was talking about, you know, back in the day when we had 28.8 modems and I was administering like internet cafes and doing LAN sharing for people, and sometimes somebody would come in and run Napster, and then that was at the end of story for everybody else, right? Because it just completely hogged the uplink. And I didn't know how to configure any traffic control or traffic shaping at the time. But anyway, looking at Android, like, what does Android do when it connects? Well, the first thing it does is connects to this Google connectivity check and does a HTTP request for this generate 204. Then it starts doing who knows what. Well, who knows, people who run maybe HTTP toolkit and inspect the traffic know, but it's sending up all this cached data from like where the phone has been and all the logs that Google Android phones keep on you that they want to send to Google every time they get a data connection. It's connecting to the Play Store to find out if there's app updates, and it's doing whatever else it does, and then maybe the customized version of the ROM that comes from the provider is connecting to them, as in what are they called, Xiaomi, which does an awful lot of that. What else? I don't know. And then on top of that, before the user even actually does anything, you know, before the user even interacts with the phone, it's already saturated your network. So there's not a lot of space left for people actually do anything. So, you know, Android? I'm actually annoyed by Google. If that's a violation of simple way to avoid takedown requests from YouTube, don't put the video on YouTube. So just a quick look at DNS top there to see, you know, what happens on the 2G network. So connectivity check, this is the first one, of course. That gets hit all the time. Android, Google APIs, Google. Facebook, Google. Great internet we have. I love it. So diverse. So what do we do? What do we do about this? So the first thing I thought was, you know, well, like as you used to do, you know, when you installed, none of us ever did that, but you know when you don't install Adobe Photoshop and then you don't want it to talk to Adobe because it'll, you know, find out it's not licensed, so you point adobe.com to 127.0.0.1. Well, you don't do that, but if you did do that, then that might work. But in this case, well, anyway, let's do it anyway. So we take control of DNS. Now, we can configure our DNS servers in our GGSN, but Android won't take much notice of that. It's just going to use Google DNS servers anyway, most of the time. So we'll just do some IP tables. Now, IP tables, sorry, it's NFT, right? But I feel that every time I type NFT into my terminal, I feel like a puppy dies somewhere in the universe. So I think they should have called it NF tables. I mean, you know. And I did, I had to, thanks to OpenWRT, I had to learn NFT syntax the other day after I updated my TP-Link, and then I was like, where's my IP tables? Why can't I just do this rule the same way as I used to have been doing it for years, and now I have to learn this horrible new syntax? But I'm sure it's better. It is better. But anyway, IP tables is still my thing. So yeah, we take control of the DNS by just redirecting port 53 to our own server. And then you can do things like if you case and you might run DNS mask, and then you can just do these kind of configurations like tell your DNS mask that the server for gstatic.com is null, and then it will return an NX domain for anything. So when the phone looks up connectivitycheck.gstatic.com, it will get back NX domain, and you think, okay, that should stop that traffic. But of course it doesn't, because Android, if it doesn't, it's like, that's not possible. What do you mean I can't resolve gstatic.com, you know? So it just tries again. And this pretty much goes for everything to do with the Android stack. Like it's just, if you deny it anything, it just says, maybe backs off for about 3 seconds and then tries again. So really bad idea, because you know, with Android, if at first you don't succeed, you try again and again, and then you get really annoyed. So, you know, so we have to do some kind of traffic shaping, but we can't block stuff. This is what I tried for a long time, and then I realized that actually, even though I'm not seeing it on the, you know, so much on the with the TCP dumps and that, what's actually happening is that well, I would see it, just not the full traffic because I'm blocking it, but the requests are still happening. So all the PDCH and all of that is all being tied up by the phone requesting TBFs to ask again what I want to look up, geoconnectivitycheck.geostatic.com. So I started looking at something else. So first of all, just let some traffic through. Okay, we want people to be able to download email and connect to some services. But port 443 is pretty much where everything happens these days. So you could block that, and I did block that, but that doesn't work because it just keeps trying. So let me just check what was I in there, 12 minutes. So the first thing that I realized is that, well, we've got to let this connectivity check happen. So what's it doing? Well, it wants to connect to connectivitycheck.geostatic.com, generate 204. So let's just redirect that somewhere locally and generate a 204 and send it back. Because if you don't do that, the phones will say on their little WIFI, if you do it on WIFI, it says that. If you connect to a WIFI that doesn't allow connect to Google, it says connected to WIFI but no internet, which is complete nonsense. I mean, if you have a local network segment and you put up a Wi-Fi access point and you connect phones to it and the phones can't reach connectivitycheck.geostatic.com, they'll say there's no internet. And I recently discovered that with one phone that I have that it won't connect to voice over Wi-Fi until it has, so there's no IMS registration over Wi-Fi until it has reached connectivitycheck.google.com. There's a little exclamation mark in the Wi-Fi thing. Probably varies on phone when you're on the mobile side of the data, how it behaves in that way. I don't think I've ever seen that message saying connected to mobile internet, but no connection to internet. So anyway, do that. So also, did I cut something off there? I don't think it really matters. At the bottom.
Could scroll.
Yeah, I could scroll. We don't scroll in slides. Yeah, I already said that. So I mean, obviously, those of you who are looking at what I've done there, you're saying, well, you're redirecting everything from port 80 to, so you're denying access to anything on port 80, which is actually okay, because nothing really is port 80 anymore. But anyway, I don't actually do that. I do have other classifications going on there. So what other classifications? Well, I mean, this was my go-to solution for classifying traffic. I just look up, that evil bandwidth hogging upstream service.com that was so popular. And then you get one of their IPs, and then you get its AS number, and then you download the list of AS, and then you create an IP set with those IPs. That's pretty easy. And then you can classify traffic. I mean, that's something I think some of us have done when you want to experiment and find out, like, what does the internet look like if you remove any of the big players from it? You can remove Google, although more and more stuff stops working if you remove Google. You can remove Facebook, and it's an easy way to stop your browser loading up a whole bunch of stuff you're not interested in. And Amazon, of course, pretty much breaks everything if you remove Amazon, because Amazon Web Services and all the JavaScript frameworks that 50 megabytes you have to download to look at a page. Somebody sent me a website. We got a website done by somebody, and they sent me a website that had, like, I don't know, I can't remember what it was. There's some ridiculous amount of data that was being downloaded for nothing. Like, nothing. I was like, why is this framework here? They just left it there because copy and paste, you know? Anyway, it's like, you know, it's like that nowadays. Bandwidth is, I don't know. I mean, you know, I think about that in the future. Maybe in the future, we'll have to go back to a time when RAM and CPU cycles and bandwidth are scarce again. And, C programmers will be in demand. So I have all the traffic classified. I can block, I can only redirect Google's port 80 because I'm not really interested in Google port 80. I can also, then use other IP tables rules. based on what provider it is. And back there, there was a thing about this WhatsApp exception. Even though WhatsApp belongs to Facebook, the actual WhatsApp.net, or the server that it uses for the XMPP part of it, or what used to be XMPP, isn't in Facebook's AS. So if you block Facebook's AS, WhatsApp can still actually connect, but then the media servers it uses to serve images that people send are in Facebook's AS. So those are dynamically resolved depending on where you are in the world. And so what I did with that was just override to point at one and then allow that IP so that people could send images to each other over WhatsApp. But somebody suggested to me at one point that maybe I should look at this IP tables module called TarPit, so that rather than Android saying, I want to talk to this, and you're saying no, either like, you know, connection refused or DNS lookup failed or whatever, causing it to retry. Well, the TarPit module, you're probably familiar with it here. What it does, as I understand it, is that it accepts the TCP connection and then sets the TCP window size to zero, effectively stalling the connection until such time as the other side would say, what does it do? It sends another, I don't know how you actually get out of that. Do you send another ACK or something? Something happens on the TCP connection where the window size is increased, right? So TarPit just does that. So that's great because the Android phone says, I want to talk to Google Play updates, and it says, yeah, cool, TCP connection open, chill. So then the TBF expires and resources are free to do other things. Apparently there are some things that can happen with that where you can tie up your own resources, but I haven't seen that happen. I just put a note there that, of course, QUIC is being used more and more, so this is UDP, so not affected, but doesn't seem to be a problem. I mean, by implementing the TarPit module and sending pretty much everything that I don't want into TarPit, I was able to free up enough resources on the limited PDCH TRXs that we have for people to start reporting to me, the instant messaging is working now. So other possible improvements that I thought about was to do something like, you know, classify ACKs with TC and put them into, you know, just prioritize small packets on the edge downlink, on the GPRS downlink. I've essentially just say one GGSN. I mean, there's could put more GGSNs, but I was just using one GGSN, and all my SGSNs connect to the same GGSN, so I don't need to replicate this everywhere. And then I sort of figured, I think if I want to make a class like that, then the rate needs to be the actual rate available on the TRX, right? Because if it's bigger than that, then I don't think it'll work right. Like if you're prioritizing stuff with these, I'm not sure though. I kind of TC, when I go into TC, and then there's a million parameters for all the different stuff and all the different queue disks and the things, but maybe somebody here knows more about that stuff. I think what I did there anyway was I set the rate on the top, the root class, well, not the root class, those HDB classes, to be more or less what the maximum possible bandwidth of all of the TRXs that I had on that GGSN was. Not sure if it made an awful lot of difference or not. I need to do some more in-depth analysis of that to see if I am really prioritizing small packets there. So I also added a small hack to Osmo GGSN because if I'm using my own phone, well, you know, I'm special. I want to be able to, if you want to be testing stuff, maybe you don't want to be blocked. And also, you know, on the GGSN, I route into our own VPN so that actually I could look at the measurement reports for circuit switched over data. so that on site you could be connected to this, to the edge network, and see the graphical measurement report readout for calls with, which shows timing advance and MS power and all those things. And so I added this kind of IMSI IP map thing to the GGSN, which is kind of like a static IP stuff, but it allowed me to reserve certain IPs in the block for certain IMSIs. And that's in some branch up there, Keith something. Sorry, it's in Rizomatica production anyway. So the downsides to all of that, well, could it be called censorship? Yeah, sure, you know. But the thing is that, like, if you don't do anything, then just nothing works, as far as I could make out. Is the intention here to say to people, you shouldn't have access to this service? Well, not really. The intention was to try to actually make something work for them at all. Like I said, you know, with one phone on the lab and in the desk, it seems to work fine. I can, you can even open some web pages, and some of them, smaller ones, and you can do a lot of stuff. But when you have 500 phones or 1,000 phones on a couple of TRX, it just wasn't working for me. So that was the agreement. That's what we said with people. Look, this is data service, but this is what it does. It only does instant messaging, really. And you could download email, but nobody downloads email on their phones, as far as I can make out, in the communities. So 1 minute. I'd love to hear suggestions, you know, not necessarily now, for what people think about that, or how we might improve that situation, or anything at all. We can. He's locked out. I don't know. We can decide if you want to take maybe a few minutes. Powell has a hand up.
Okay. So you are only handling congestion on the, let's say, air interface of GSM here, but do you also have, like, the intention is also to limit the traffic on the other side? Because usually I think you have, like, Wi-Fi maybe, I don't know if that's still the case, like Wi-Fi access or whatever, and then it drops, or I don't know if you also have problems on that other interface, let's say.
We've migrated most of the sites now to Starlink.
Okay.
Sorry, but you know, it's just so, yeah, I mean, it was since about a year ago. So there's loads of bandwidth on the other side. It's not about that. It's about, as far as I could make out, it's about the tying up the PDCH and the TBF capacity.
Please go on. Ah, okay, I thought you wanted to continue talking. No, just like there's also some CODEL implementations in Osmo PCU. I don't know if you look at that, integrated into the code. So that's basically similar stuff to what you were doing with TC, integrated in there. So that's something you may also want to look at.
So. Okay.
So you mentioned Android, right? But how about those Apple things? Aren't they so popular, I guess?
Hey, iPhones. We don't have an awful lot of iPhones in the communities, but the iPhone is a little bit better behaved. I mean, when it comes online, it does try to reach a lot of stuff, tries to talk to apple.com. I don't know what it's doing there, but Apples generally seem to, at least the ones that I've looked at, that I've had, when you background an app in iPhone, it seems to pretty much not do much. I presume it has its own, they have their own push notification thing, right? And that wakes up apps and does whatever, but it's, yeah, I mean, it's not all Android, it's not all Google. Even there's also connectivitycheck.ubuntu.com, right, which you've seen. And so, yeah, it's not all just one company. And as I did mention, it's also the mobile phone manufacturers as well that are pinging themselves and sending all kinds of stuff about GPS coordinates and things like that.
I think the what you're describing in your talk is a thing we call buffer bloat in the networking communities. So it's a well-researched thing, and we have a couple of mitigations for that. It's a thing that also occurs on high bandwidth links, not only on the GSM networks. I think we should talk later about how to mitigate this.
Okay,
and yeah, but buffer bloat is the keyword, I think, to solving these issues.
So just a quick comment about the MCIS-9 that you're seeing very rarely. I guess that's because it basically has a calling rate of 1, so it's literally unprotected, and even though the information can be resent, it basically relies on having a perfect link, so it's very rare to actually see that in practice unless you're literally sitting next to the BTS.
Okay, on the MCIS-9, I see it a bit on the downlink, but very rarely on the uplink. This is how I only have the graph for the downlink there, but yeah, on that one. Okay, thanks.
There's also some room for improvement also on how we set up TBFs in Osmo PCO, because right now the amount of TBFs, so number of mobile phones connected, increase. We assign less time slots to each new phone, so as because otherwise we get out of USFs and TFIs and whatever. So that means that even if you may have like 4 time slots, they get allocated less time slots than you should get. And we have no dynamic reallocation of TBFs. So that means that if it's created at some point with a small set of TBFs and then the network usage is released, well, it just decreases, then basically they don't get dynamically better amount of TBF, well, of time slots until the TBF is finished and then it's created again. Which means if you are doing a long download, if it just happens that at some point you create the TBF when it's really loaded the network, then you will have basically a long shitty TBF, let's say, for a long while. So that's something we can now work on, and I will talk a bit about that later on the other talk.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how many phones are connected in a cell for how many time slots, for how many data channels you have? Do you have one data channel for 100 phones? Do you have any idea?
I mean, it varies from place to place. I could pull out that statistic, I guess, yeah, because we know how many phones. Well, what I don't really know is how many phones are not authorized on the network. I mean, sure, there's statistics on how many data access requests there were, right? And how many...
One question, how many data channels do you have usually on the site? So you have how many AFSCNs do you have running, and how many time slots is this usually? Is it usually one data channel, one time slot for data on, or do you have dynamic time slots?
I mean, the usual TRX config that I'm using is one dedicated PDCH and 3 dynamic and 2 static half rate channels. But I'm not sure why that is, actually. There's no reason really not to have the other ones also dynamic. I think, yeah. I had some problems with the. Well, I won't say that now. It's another topic. Just quickly, I think a lot of what I was saying there as well is that I'm not sure that we also have a lot less uplink capacity than downlink capacity, right? Because we're still only having one uplink TBF.
Not anymore.
Should we?
I think there's some specific cases where only one TS is created, but in general, I think it's improved.
Okay.
There's this case for that, so it's known. That's it. I'm documenting somewhere.
And we still have less uplink bandwidth than downlink bandwidth, I generally find. But maybe that's the phones. That's about 10 minutes over, so shall we?
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Our schedule is a bit relaxed, and we never really fully on time anyway. I think it's good. Thanks for the questions. Thanks for the talk.